It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Before we go on to our next segment, I did want to make one correction, a mistake on my part, talking about Paula Reed Ward and the 15 death penalty cases she has covered. The Robert Ferrante case was not one of those. The prosecution in that case did not seek the death penalty. From 2010 to 2015, the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police investigated 311 homicides. Only 163 of those have been cleared with an arrest or other explanation for the death. This week, WESA, working with our content partner, Public Source, has begun airing the multi-part series, The Aftermath of Murder, on unsolved African-American homicides in Pittsburgh. Joining us to discuss the series are WESA reporter Megan Harris and Public Source reporter Jeffrey Benzing. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
First of all, what inspired this series?
I had looked at some national figures. Homicide clearances are a big problem nationwide, and I realized that so many of these cases were going unsolved and wanted to see what was going on here in Pittsburgh, and found actually that Pittsburgh had a bigger problem than some of the other places. The national clearance rate is about 65%. We found here in Pittsburgh it's about half are going unsolved, and if you go on through the court system, see if there was a conviction, with cases that don't result in someone getting convicted for a murder, you actually find it's less than half over that period.
And why are so many of these cases unsolved?
It's complicated. In a lot of cases, it's actually the killer is known, and it's a problem of witnesses feeling safe to come forward to the police. The issue of getting someone to testify is a huge, huge problem here in Pittsburgh and in many places. Just kind of the trust of the police, the citizens feeling like they don't have that connection where they can come forward and feel like justice will be done. You also have a lot of the cases involving people who have committed crimes themselves. So they're not necessarily going to think, okay, I'm going to go call the police. It's just not sort of in their worldview of who to go to.
And that speaks to a trust issue of relations between members of the community and the police department?
I think community relations have been a big issue for the Pittsburgh police and, you know, police departments nationwide. There's been a concerted effort on the part of our new police chief to address that and build relationships. A lot of his new commanders have echoed those sentiments. But it's just kind of a building process to get people more accustomed to the idea that, yes, these can be trusted individuals and we can go to them if something happens to us.
And you mentioned the new Pittsburgh police chief, or relatively new at this point. He's been in the job now for over a year, which has gone by very quickly. Police Chief Cameron McLay, who you interviewed for your story. What does he say about these cases?
He's made it very clear that it's unacceptable that these many are going unsolved, and has very much reached out to the community and tried to rebuild that trust, which over years, if not decades, has eroded, and made it clear also that violence in this city can be sort of attributed to a very small portion of the community. It's not just you go into Homewood or the Hill District and everyone's a criminal and everyone's shooting. That's not true, and he's made that very clear. And has tried to change that mindset that if you come to the police, you could be putting yourself in danger and be in a position where you come forward and you testify and still nothing happens.
And is there or has there been tangible racial bias? I mean, what about that elephant in the room?
I think that's definitely something that Cameron McLay addressed early on. In our piece, we do mention that, you know, retaliatory violence is something that they're worried about. And especially, you know, just the perception of not giving credence to cases that, a lot of the community say we should be paying more attention. From the detective's perspective, they say that every case is, kind of brings that same level of confidence. They go at it the same way. You know, they don't look at it differently based on neighborhood. The community obviously argues that point. Everyone's pointed to the Wolf Sisters case as a huge reason for that.
Yeah, and also just with the way the homicide stats go, there's probably some people right now who are driving down Penn Avenue And if you look on one side to Point Breeze and Shady's side and the kind of updated part of East Liberty, over the time period, there is literally no homicides. And if you go the other way, Larimer and Homewood and the other part of East Liberty, it's almost 100 over that period. And about half of those also are unsolved still. And so you see this having a really disproportionate impact on the Black community. And this feeling that this is a pain and grief that is so acutely felt there and isn't noticed or isn't properly sort of understood in the rest of the city.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the collaboration between WESA and our content partner Public Source on the multi-part series, The Aftermath of Murder on Unsolved African-American Homicides in Pittsburgh. Our guests are Megan Harris, who is with WESA, and Public Source reporter Jeffrey Benzing. And, you know, we've been talking about issues of trust and about people who are afraid to talk. And there are the trust issues, but there's also the fear of reprisal, fear of violating some sort of a code about we don't talk about what happens here to anybody, even the police.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very clear issue. Almost everybody that we talk to, I would say, for the story has raised that as being something that is not just a perception, but can be a very real threat, including Chief McClay saying so. He's essentially said it takes the whole community as one standing up and saying, you know, this is unacceptable. Here are the people who are responsible, as opposed to if it's just me as an individual standing up, then kind of the bad guys single you out. And that's a real threat.
So what are the police saying about what they're doing to get people in African-American communities to trust them?
I mean, a lot of it's got to do with some of that community support. There have been a lot of individual meetings, a lot of groups that have stood up and started their own, you know, kind of model for this is what my skill is. This is what I can bring to the table and reaching out in the way that they feel best. I think the missing piece at this point is still collaboration, getting all of those groups to move as one, to act as one, and to include the police force in all of those activities. I know, you know, Commander Lando in Zone 5, that where some of this is doubly plagued, like Jeff said, you know, those are where so many of these homicides occur. They go, I think he said, to 17 or 18 community meetings a month, trying to make sure that they don't miss anybody. They host their own meeting and they try to invite everyone, but at this point, people aren't coming to them in the same way that they are trying to go out to everyone else. So some of that collaboration, that missing piece, I think is going to be a big part of making any kind of forward progress.
Are there any other components to that? I mean, there's the meetings, but is there some other type of interaction that maybe needs to take place?
Well, the police have kind of relaunched this program that was not really bought into before they tried to do it starting in 2010, which is based on a model that's been embraced by a lot of cities. It's called Ceasefire, and then it was the Pittsburgh Initiative to Reduce Crime. That's been sort of recast as group violence intervention, where the police are trying to kind of really focus in on the small percentage of residents that are engaged in violent crime, know who they are for one thing, but also try to be kind of an intervention. If it's there's a shooting and then they expect retaliation, to get there before that shooting happens and somebody gets killed, and to then also offer services, you know, try to get people who would be willing away from the criminal life. And so it's not an outcome where it's dead or in jail, to show that there's another path out. And that's really, really just starting, though. And from talking to experts, they always say the important thing is not the rollout. It's what happens in the year and the years afterward on the ground.
The series has debuted. We've got about 30 seconds left. What's coming up?
We're looking really close at the issue of the racial disparity and sort of the unfairness that we see in Pittsburgh with that, some issues that are historical and what can be done to fix that going forward.
Megan, has there been some feedback on this?
Yeah, there's been a little bit so far. We'd have a lot of good feedback from folks in the community, and we're looking forward to more as further parts roll out.
Well, it will continue on WESA. It is the multi-part series, The Aftermath of Murder on Unsolved African-American Homicides in Pittsburgh, a collaboration between WESA and our content partner, Public Source. We've been talking with WESA reporter Megan Harris and also Public Source reporter Jeffrey Benzing. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.